Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow with just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbisn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Welcome to tonight's Mess with MS, where Susan, Erica, and I, your host Lisa Dreyer, are going to be talking about sexual health and MS. We are particularly going to be diving into the topic of sexual health and activity during your midlife when you have MS. This is often a taboo subject, and if it's not taboo, it's certainly an overlooked one or a hot potato of a subject, and that no one particularly wants to touch. You can call in at 424-243-9420. Individuals with MS, BI, and other chronic health conditions need to work with their neurologists, OBGYNs, and healthcare teams. And please don't take anything that you hear on Mess with MS as expert advice. Always consult your doctor before starting a new regime. While I do have fun and fantastic guests on my show, none of us are experts on your biology or medical needs. Always consult a healthcare professional if you are noticing changes in your body. Even if it is changes in your sexual life and function, and you find that slightly embarrassing to talk about. But first off, I'd like to introduce my guests that are here with me this evening. They are both wonderful ladies who have MS and have been on multiple shows with me and who you can look up in the Blog Talk Radio Brain Injury Radio archives. Erica, can you please say hello and tell everyone when you were diagnosed, your current relationship circumstances, and if you want to share anything else, that's fine too. Erica? Uh-oh. Erica, can you hear me? Did I lose Erica?
I'm still here, Lisa.
Oh, okay. I guess we lost Erica. But Susan, can you... Oh, wait. We did. We lost Erica for a second. That's so funny. Erica, I was just going to ask you to introduce yourself, and I guess we'd lost you. Erica, can you introduce yourself? Oh, I guess we still have. But Erica, I mean Susan, can you introduce yourself?
Yes. Yeah. Hi, everybody. My name's Susan. I'm 52 years old, and I was diagnosed with MS when I was, 30. I just finished my master's degree in fine art in San Francisco and was diagnosed with MS. So I guess, yeah, I've had it for 24 years. Oh, my gosh. So am I forgetting to answer something? Did I touch
your
everything?
Relationship status. Yeah, your relationship status.
Okay. Well, I am currently married to a man that I met at Renaissance Pleasure Fair when I was doing it.
Well, thank you so much, Susan.
Sure.
Okay. Well, and I'll go ahead and say that, well, my name's Lisa. I always get this wrong, and that is part of my MS too. I am 42. see, I always get it wrong. And I have been diagnosed since I was 30. And I am currently in a relationship. It's so tough. And I currently have a boyfriend who also has MS. And that's pretty much all about me that I say that I can add into this conversation. And I think that is Erica. Let's add her into this. Hi, Erica.
Hi, Lisa. So sorry about that. I had to call in with a different phone.
Oh, it's okay. It happens. So I was just asking if you could tell us about yourself, your age, your relationship status, or around your age, your relationship status.
That's funny. Yes, well, my name is Erica. I'm out of Miami, Florida, and I've been married for 16 years, and I am 37 years old. I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2015, but obviously I had known something was wrong from before then, so I've been dealing with it for over 10 years, long over 10 years.
Yeah, I understand that. I was wondering what was wrong, what was quote unquote wrong with me for a very long time. I was looking for a diagnosis for 10 years prior to figuring out that I had MS, and it was very difficult. I've never been married, but I've been engaged multiple times, and I know that a lot of people say that they have their relationships end and all kinds of things, and like I said, I can understand that one because I've been engaged multiple times. So I do understand that.
Just left my husband and I was getting my master's degree and all this stuff was happening all at once. So yeah, a lot of stress was happening and that's when most people end up having their diagnosis.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't have anything going on. I was, I had normal stress, you can say, in my life at the time. Young mother, working professional, all of that. I had finished school. I was pretty much settled, but out of nowhere, it was sort of all of the constellation, as they say, the constellation of symptoms had never really hit at the same time. It was, okay, well, I'm having a weird vision problem. Well, I'm having a weird balance problem. Oh, well, you know, this feels weird today. This, all those things, nothing hit at once. And then when everything hit at once, was when it was a very clear diagnosis. Like, oh, well, this is what it has to be. You know, because otherwise everything was pinging differently. And so it just seemed like, it. What could it be, you know?
Are you still in Miami?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was wondering if you were still in the Miami area.
Yes. Yeah, born and raised. Okay. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Made in Dade.
I'm born and raised.
Here.
Okay. I'm born and raised in Los Angeles.
Ah, yes. LA, we have, you know, we have pride in our cities, right, when we're from here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great city.
We all love, we're both, Suzanne and I are both from LA, and I think we both have pride, we all have pride in our cities. I am 42, and I was diagnosed when I was 30, and I spent a good part of my 30s in rehab, and rehab as an occupational therapy and treatment for my multiple sclerosis. And I have never been married, but like I was saying, I have been engaged multiple times, and I would say that my disease has been heavily impacted by my relationships in a negative fashion. Now that I know
well, the
more
science
about my
is
disease,
there for that, Lisa. The science is there for that, that when you have those environmental stressors in the outside, that absolutely impacts both your emotional health, your physical health, your sexual health, and that's where we're ending this conversation. You know, it all impacts it. So it's like, you know, it can become a very stressful moment for you in that time, say maybe an argument, a discussion that doesn't go your way, whatever. And then it can just start snowballing and building. And then before you know it, you don't want to look at that person. You definitely don't want to sleep with them. And then you're getting all in your own head about a million things, which can cause stress on said relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why it's important, I think, to have this show, and especially about like this, because, Susan and I did the show about middle age, and we were talking about you're not quite at like what the like expert opinion is called middle age. You're not quite at that, Erica. But like we talked about how middle age can bring about changes in sex drive for those with MS and BI and other chronic illnesses, and that these conditions can affect both physical and psychological aspects of, you know, your sexual health. And the key things that you should consider in those things are like physical limitations, medication side effects, psychological impacts, relationship dynamics, and hormonal changes. And so during the show, I want to dive in and talk about these things. And so I'm going to ask you guys to answer a few questions about like all of those like touchstones, basically, and what your symptomology is regarding those things or how you've dealt with them and like if you've ever experienced them. So like, Susan, have you ever experienced any physical limitations that have negatively affected your sex life?
Yes, I really have. When I was diagnosed and I had left my husband, I started a relationship with a woman, and we had sex that was fine for a good 2 years, and then I lost the ability to have an orgasm. And so I would say probably for a good 10, 12 years, I didn't orgasm. And you'd think that I could work through it, you know, sex positive, lesbians, all that. But my partner was bipolar, and it was really tough, really, really tough. So I've worked through my new relationship, and now that I'm calm in a very fulfilling, happy marriage, I am able to finally reach climax. And I have a very healthy sex life, but it took a long time for me to be able to get to that point, because you've got to be able to have a bit of stamina in order to reach the high point, is what I'll call it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I couldn't do it for, I guess, like 10 or 12 years. So,
well, and
I hope I answered the question.
No, you did. Well, let me say, I was just, I was sitting down with my girlfriends at a dinner, and we were all talking. And I just want to say to everyone out there that all of these things apply to everyone. It's not just if you have MS. Sex is, all these problems, they're everyone's problems. It's not just if you have MS or a brain injury or an autoimmune disease or. Sex is normal and natural, and it all these problems affect everybody. So it's a perfectly normal thing, and it's pretty puritanical if you don't talk about it. And
and really speaking about it is the main thing. Yeah, being able to at least speak about it, at least with in the context of listening to something like this, or whether it's communicating with a close friend or a family member, or the best person is with your partner. Sort of, you know, the best person to discuss this with is your partner. And then just having, you know, clear, concise, small words, not trying to scare anybody off. This is how it would be best for everybody, and then get feedback. I think that's something that is huge, feedback, getting and accepting feedback, so that you whistle. You say the, you know, I call it whistling. So you call it the high moment or the high point, I call it whistling.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you, like, and if you guys, if I address a question to you, just know that you can answer it any way that you want to. You can answer it according to whatever breadth of experience. So, Erica, have you ever heard anything about physical limitations that you can comment on as applied to MS? And I'm going to answer
too. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. When I was first diagnosed, there was, aside from the physical part where, I spent 18 days in the hospital. And then after I got home, I was physically so weak, I couldn't do much for myself, let alone with another person. And then I started, you know, living with family temporarily till I got better, while my husband and son lived in our home. So I had to move out of my home to move in with family to help care for me. That's a physical limitation if I've ever heard one. And so we were able to overcome those things by just the virtue of allowing myself to get into remission, and then from remission, working to keep that spark healthy, and recognizing that when I am going back into a relapse, or I am going into a particularly difficult flare season, because I just call them flare seasons, when I get them, we are able to talk about it, and, you know, we can lean on the good times, because there's going to be a month or so of bad times, or 2 months of bad times.
Yeah. And
or 6 months.
I mean,
you don't know.
You never know, right?
You know, or 10 years. You never know, right? It can be. The span of time is. It can be a day. It can be a year. It can be 10 years. It's just sometimes it can all feel the same.
Yeah.
Only thirsty people think of water.
Yep. Very true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think of things like migraines, and migraines affect things like my day-to-day life, and they make me feel distinctly unsexy. And I also think of things like spasticity, and I think that when you have MS and I have terrible fatigue issues, and I know that that MS saps my strength and my energy, and that I get impacted in ways that I have to, I know it makes me feel that I have to urge people. It makes me feel like I have to talk to people and tell them, like, you know, this is, you know, sometimes you feel like you have to shake people and tell them, like, you need to work out, you need to eat, and have
take
a healthy
advantage
diet
of it,
and
what you have, yeah.
Yeah, sleep 6 to 8 hours a night. But, like, I know no one wants to hear that, you know, and you know, that's
everyone
something
hates
that,
good advice. My mom says that.
Everyone
hates good
advice. Yeah. So, and especially, I know no one wants to hear that, especially if, you know, they are sick too. And I know that that's something that other chronically ill people really, really hate hearing, especially. let's talk about medications for MS and brain injuries and chronic illnesses, because medications for MS and brain injury and chronic illnesses can negate sexual desire and function. And
absolutely. Interferons are rough. Interferons are rough. They save lives, absolutely.
Yes, they are.
But they zap any sort of desire for life, let alone physical intimacy. But again, they save lives.
There are multiple medications that can cause sexual dysfunction, decreased libido, and fatigue. Yeah, and like you were saying, that they're there for us, but we need them. We need them for our ailments. And so our ailments win over our sexual needs. So it sounds like you've experienced this, Erica.
Yes.
What did you do to resolve or deal with this problem?
To get back on track with a spouse, basically, you have to you speak about what you each like. And if there was something that he, you know, particularly enjoyed visually, well, then let's key into that visual part. And then the other stuff will come with it. And the same thing with me. So if it's going to take me a little bit longer, or if it's going to have to require, you know, thinking or, you know, or discussing something before, then that's just what it's going to have to take. You know, and that's it. You know, it might be a little bit harder, but it's not impossible. If you are in the right headspace and communication space and are able to address each other from a place of, like, respect, where it's not, hey, you have a disability, so I don't even want to look at you. And it's not, hey, you're my caretaker, I only see you as a butler. That's not what you want. That will kill sex drive. That will kill libido. And with medication, when you add medications on top of it, we talk about interferons. They interfered with me, particularly. I had over 80 infusions of Tysabri. You heard that, right? Over 80 months. At 80 months.
Wow.
My veins were exhausted, so it was like trying to check out a pincushion, right? You know, so so that's another physical limitation of looking like an IV drug user, because you've got thick veins going all through your arm. And then when those get exhausted, they use your hands. And so then you have, you know, so right now I'm on a monthly injection at home, an at-home monthly injection. And so that guarantees that there's going to be one day out of the month that, please don't talk to me, I don't feel well. So these are physical limitations. So, like I said at the beginning, if you talk about it and you're really, you know, open about it, and if there's something your partner really likes physically that you can kind of key into, try that. If they like lingerie, try that. If they like, you know, a funny accent.
Something else.
I don't know. Just do it. And the same thing in reverse. If you only, as a disabled person or as a person with a chronic injury or, you know, brain injury, or a person that has multiple sclerosis or whatever, autoimmune disorder, fill in the blank, if you only view your caretaker or your partner as a caretaker, you will immediately start devaluing them, and they are a butler. And that's terrible.
Yeah.
Both are very untenable positions. So how do you get out of it? Key in.
No, you need to put something into, your relationship. Have you ever experienced this, Susan, with taking a medication?
I have no idea. Well, I did
I've taken medications on an empty stomach when I'm not supposed to, and that was horrible, and I got sick for a week. But I don't see, I don't think I've had any relation of sexual ability or disability connected to any medication that I was taking. Yeah, I don't think so.
Like suppressed libido or something, not specifically, but definitely suppressed.
Yeah.
Physical.
I don't think I can really answer it because it was a good 10 or 12 years where there was no sex going on at all. But then I didn't want to touch her because she was being horrible. So that was probably it as well. I don't think it's
in relationships.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, she, it just went to a very bad place. So I'm very the only good thing about having a bad relationship is that you know what to look out for. So I was yes. I remember telling a friend of mine, Patrick, this is what I want, 1, 2, 3, 4. Do you know someone? And he said, yeah, it's this guy right here. You should go meet him. And turned out I met him before, and I'd met him before. And we ended up going out, and we've been together since, ever since.
That's wonderful.
Okay, well, that is wonderful. I do love your story.
Yeah,
I'm going to talk
years
about...
And then with a person who's emotionally unstable, I mean, it's that... It's, mm-hmm. How do you have room for a person who's emotionally unstable when you're physically unstable in the relationship? There's just too much instability there, and I can just imagine that by itself is going to cause
I didn't
a
have
whole
a choice.
Heap of problems. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have a choice. I was stuck in this situation, and I just bided my time for a way to get out of it. And when the time rose, 12 years later, I took it, and everything worked out okay.
I hope,
but it was a lot of planning.
I hope that now it's just like amazing and it's like double time for you because that sounds like a really tough. That sounds like such a really tough like lot, you know. So
mm-hmm.
it's like wow, you know, that's a tough lot to draw. So I just really hope it's going really well for you right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm very fortunate that I saw someone that had all the good points that I wanted and. I didn't realize it would come in a package of a guy who was a total computer nerd and also someone who had a wonderful freak flag to fly as he used to play be in Rocky Horror Picture Show, a very well-known one, and he was a Brad. So, hey.
You guys are wonderful together.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are wonderful mm-hmm. together.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what's
I think
happening
something
right
that
now
might also
really
be helpful is like having that connection. You know, that's mm-hmm. always so helpful because mm-hmm. I mean, you can have an orgasm with a one night stand, but does it really mean the same
yeah.
thing? I mean, sure,
yeah.
you could. You know, you can have a great time with a one night stand, but it doesn't mean
mm-hmm.
the same as with a committed partner who knows a lot about you and. Wants to know more about you.
Yeah, but I'm not even going to say that one is better than the other because it's my own personal opinion. And I've had one-night stands and I've had meaningful relationships and they're all good in their own different way. Right now, I happen to be with a husband and I'm very, very happy.
And I'm talking about like when you have a disability, the
mm-hmm.
the comfort sometimes, like when you have to explain fatigue, you know, for everything around disclosure, right, where,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're going to want to tell them before. And then once you get to that point, you can be a little bit more tender with that person, be like, hey, I'm tired. Because if you tell a one-night stand, hey, I'm tired, that's over. You know, like that's it. So that's what I was really trying to put a
mm-hmm.
light on, you know, where you really can't have that sort of vulnerability 100% with your disability with a person that you just don't have that trust.
Yeah, there
with.
Is no room for vulnerability
trust.
With someone you don't know.
There
yeah,
is
there
really
is none of
it's
that.
It's dangerous for you. It's dangerous. It's dangerous for you. It's outright dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say, as far as talking about medications, I'd like to give a little bit of education out here. So the FDA has approved a medication called ADDYI for women, and it treats low desire in, but this is only in premenopausal women. Let's put it out there. And
so
it treats low desire for premenopausal women, which I found really interesting. So if you're a woman and you have low desire, you can ask your doctor about ADDI, and it will help you with that. And
is that for people that have a disability, or is that
it's
for everybody?
Anyone? Anyone. Oh,
okay.
Anyone out there? There's a pill called ADDI. So it's A D D Y I. And for anything else, you can talk to your OBGYN or your sex therapist. So everything else, doctors and therapists will talk to you about clitoral stimulants, creams, lubricants, and medications. They might talk to you about hormones that will fuel your fire. And that's pretty much what they'll suggest. So FDA will also talk to you if you're a man. They might talk to you about Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, and Stendra. These are all, men have many more options, you guys out there, for erectile dysfunction. Now, for premature ejaculation, here we go, there's a big list. There's topical treatments, which include sertraline, perexiditine, and those are for ED. And now, so men report for ED that they have low self-esteem in the bedroom. So that sertraline and paroxetine help them with their erectile dysfunction, and they make them feel better with those things, and it helps them with their low self-esteem, and it makes them feel better, and it helps them to feel better about it, and it makes them, and it helps ignite the sparks in the bedroom, obviously. So you ladies being ladies, have you heard of or tried any things with your partner?
No, I haven't. But, you know, when before you get menopause, there's perimenopause. And during that time of your life, either you're going to have no urge for it, or you're going to be like an Energizer bunny.
And what
so
is
just be aware
that I'm like, yeah, I'm hypersexualized, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm 37. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have low desire. That's not it. That's definitely not it.
Well, you're lucky.
I feel the same way. I feel the same. So. I'll just go out and say that on the radio. I guess
Well, I mean, I had no desire when I was in the bad relationship, but once I was out of that, it went boom right back up. So
yeah, but I guess that's emotional. So yeah, if you're in a bad emotional place, that makes sense.
Goes back to that vulnerability thing I said earlier. It's like you can't be vulnerable with someone you don't like or
you
don't
know.
Someone
you don't like, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's very hard to feel vulnerable and the intimacy thing, it's hard to handle that with someone that you don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's different kinds and forms of intimacy. Okay, so there can be a psychological impact from living with MS. So we all know that MS can lead to stress, and stress can lead to anxiety and depression.
Oh, those, I call those flavors of stress. Those are the flavors. So there's different flavors of stress. And so anxiety and depression are just two flavors. And but yeah, they come big time.
Yeah.
They show up.
Yeah.
So does childhood trauma. But, you know, that's another one. That's just another flavor of it.
Ooh la la. Yeah, and they can impact you as a person. And it can lead to deleterious effects on your relationship. That could be another flavor.
Yeah.
Deleterious.
Relationship problem.
Relationship problem. So obviously you agree. You agree, Erica? Do you agree, Susan?
Yes.
So you found factors such as stress, anxiety, and depression have bad effects on your relationship. Okay. So I think we all agree,
which is, I think, a woman thing. I would like to add that it's probably that question in and of itself. I think most women would probably say yes to. I won't even speak on the sort of masculine ideal because I don't know. But I think maybe most women would say yeah, and. It probably goes a little further than that, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't want to speak too far into something I don't know. So yeah, I'll leave it there.
Are you saying, Erica, that you don't think that men would say the same?
I'm saying I wouldn't know how men would think on that question. But I know,
okay.
Like, for me, the answer is yes. And for what I think, maybe women, it's always going to have a little bit more of, like, an emotional, component, a feeling component, I guess.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I think it depends on the man.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's why I'm not even going to dare, I'm not going to deign speak on the male psyche, but... For most women, I think the answer would probably be yes. Probably more of a feminine, a girl or a woman or whatever thing, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you. Do you think that stress, anxiety, and depression, and I think we've already touched on this, Susan, do you think those factors play on your actual sexual desires, like your sexual desires? Uh-oh. Susan, did I lose you?
Oh, I don't hear her.
I don't hear her either. Do you think that stress, anxiety, and depression play on your sexual desires, Erica?
Yes, in the sense that if I'm too stressed, the desire of what I would like to get into is different. So if I'm feeling fatigued and I'm feeling still in the mood, I'm not going to want to do anything elaborate. But if I'm feeling fatigued and I'm not in the mood, I'm very clear about that and it's not happening. But then when I'm not fatigued and I'm in the mood, you're going to have a very active and participant, you know, a very active participant, because what I would be, yes. So the answer is yes. The way that I feel and physically and mentally or whatever can totally impact the desires that I have, and the way that I will have those desires actually expressed. So it's like when I'm feeling fatigued, I just want to be held, and the way that I want the act to proceed is a little more gentle. And then when I'm feeling a little bit more upbeat and I'm not as fatigued, more energized, well, then we can get more creative.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
And I desire the creativity. And I desire the creativity.
Yeah, I completely understand that. Let me see if this is Susan.
Yes.
Susan?
Yeah,
good.
Yes.
I'm glad I found you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I found you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you feel? Do you think that it impacts your sexual?
Yes.
Yes. You think it does?
Yes, I have. I found that it has, because I couldn't climax, and but then accidentally I found out that cold water is quite an exciting experience.
Welcome to the showers.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, cold water on there, and boom, it hit me on my back, and boom, to the roof, to the moon. I was very happy about that.
Mm-hmm. That is one of the most interesting things I have learned in any of my interviews, and one of the things that might be one of the most helpful things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very thankful that you've shared that for all the people out there.
It was funny that I mentioned it to my husband. He said, oh, yeah, I heard about that. Some of my friends told me about it. And so I was just absolutely gobsmacked that he knew about this already.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
just another reason to like the cold weather.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Susan, do you still think that intimacy is strong in your relationship? And what do you think could strengthen it if you are not happy with it currently?
If I wasn't happy with it, I guess.
Well, okay, so since you're happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. So do you think that you and your husband make time for romance in your life?
It's interesting the way we find time right now, because we're taking care of my mother-in-law, and I just welcomed my stepfather into my home. So not only am I taking care of myself, but also we're taking care of parents. So that's a little difficult, and I did have to walk away for a little bit to help my dad. And, gosh, what else was I going to say? You know, my husband has brought up things that he wanted to try. And since he was interested in spanking, and at first I was like, no, I don't want to do that. You know, I don't want to do anything that'll hurt you. And then I let it sit for a month or so, and I brought it up. Okay, so I told him that I would again, and he was very happy about this, and I realized it wasn't a pain thing. It was about different sensations. I guess the most important thing to do is when someone brings up something new, not to totally poo-poo the idea. Just be open.
Yes, absolutely. Just like super open-minded, because the worst thing that you're going to be met with is no. And if you really cared about the relationship or the person, you could have just accept the no and be like, okay, well, I guess this is maybe a red line for them and they'd rather not cross it. And okay, I can live with that. And if it's something you can't live with, well, you just answered your own question. You can't live without it. So, you know, but if it's, you're very clear in the relationship of, hey, I'd like to try this. Okay, I'd be open to trying it once, and then you chew it once, and it's like past your limit. Just be open about it. And the worst thing that your partner can tell you is, like, that's not something I'm interested in, sorry. And that's it. That's it. So just like you said about the freak flag earlier, just let it be known. Be like, okay, how about this?
Mm-hmm.
And the most you're going to be met with is resistance. And you might even like that resistance. You know, you might like having to convince the other person. So, you know, who knows?
There's
And you never know what you're going to like either, right? So,
right.
Erica, do you still think the intimacy is strong in your relationship?
Yes. And it's strong because it's on so many levels. You know, I mean, we've just known each other for so long that we just know each other. And in sexual relationships, you just get happy and then you just stay happy. And that's, sometimes when you fall out of being happy, you try to fall back into being happy and you work on it and that's it. You know, it's like being happy is an act you work on. It's not like you just, oh, I'm happy. How awesome. No, that's mania. You have to work on being happy. You have to
That's what I hate about now is that no one's content. People don't know what happiness or contentment are. They think that marriage is not something that you work on. People don't know what work is, actually. They think that you just, like, give up on things. I think that people don't know what work is anymore, and they just think that giving up on things is a good thing.
Exactly.
You know,
like,
there's some people that do.
Suck, so let's, like, break up. No, don't do that, you know? Like, talk about it. Maybe, you know, like, relationships are so, like, it's, like, multifaceted or whatever. There's so many ways to view it, to view any one relationship. When you start adding the intimacy component to it, it can feel like a burden because then you add in the inherent burden feeling that you get when you get diagnosed with anything. You could be diagnosed with eczema and you're going to feel like a burden. So, you know, when you get something like MS, it's like, oh my God, how is this person going to view me? So when you think about having a healthy, intimate life, for me, it's because it's on so many levels that it makes it healthy, that it makes it happy. And you work on being happy by talking to each other.
Well, you know, I think all of us have been in our relationship for a very long time, and there's so many other people that haven't been in their relationship for a long time and aren't used to the long haul and being accepting of the change that people go through. We're going to go up, we're going to go down, to the side, all those different steps. And I lost my train of thought. Hello, MS, I hate you.
you gave a good answer. I like the answer you gave. You said something that was very pithy there. But managing a chronic illness can place a strain on even the strongest relationships. And that strain can affect sexual desire, and it can affect your partner's well-being. It can, you know, have you experienced this in your intimate relationships? Either of you, have you experienced this, Erica, like with your partner? Like, has it affected you? Like, if you've been sick or if your partner's been sick, has it affected
you? My
self-esteem.
That's one word, you know, that I haven't heard today, and I don't generally like, you know, to think about because it's like, you know, but like, if so is my libido. But then there's been other moments when my self-esteem is in the toilet. And the only thing that's going to make me feel better is connectivity. And so it really does depends. That's one of those, you know, right, where spicy neurodivergency, and it's just one of the flavors of, you know, of how it is. And it really, that's kind of depends, you know, that's my long answer, I guess.
Well, yeah. I'm thinking about my last relationship with a woman, and it was very difficult. She was being such a problem that, yeah, I lost my sexual, my yearn to have sex with her. I didn't want her to touch me. But she, being bipolar, was using everything against me to get the way she wanted. Like, I had a real bad fear of needles, and she was the one that was supposed to give me my injections. And to get back at me for whatever reason, she wouldn't give me my shots. And so
wow. It
was, yeah, I went through that. I went through a lot with her.
Wow, no, I haven't had that. We've been petty, like, you know, the whole, you know, I will not open any jars for you. You know, I've had that. Like, I'm not going to open a jar. You know, or the reverse, and it's not really rude. It's more along the line, because that's dangerous. You know, again, but you experienced.
Yes. Yes, it was.
And that's abusive. Absolutely. I've had more along the lines of, you know, little petty things that might happen in the course of a 16-year-long relationship. And I'm like the master at being petty. So it happens, but wow, like somebody doing something like that. If that should. Yeah, your libido can't possibly grow if you're in fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
There were a lot of
other
things that happened. That was just one of the things that happened, and I knew I had to get out of the relationship, and I'm glad that I did. So.
Are either of you on speakerphone?
I'm on speakerphone.
No.
Oh, you're on speakerphone. Susan, is there any way that you could go off of your speakerphone?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
And
thank
I just
you.
Did.
Okay,
there
thank
is no
you.
Sound in the room that I'm in.
Okay,
there's
yeah.
no sound in here, so.
Sometime it sounds funny on over the radio connect if someone is on speakerphone. Sorry.
Okay. No problem.
Okay. So have you found that communication is important when it comes to your sexual needs and desires?
Yeah, it's. I think it's important for everybody, whether you've got MS or not. You need to talk about these things. We're not mind readers. You can't expect your partner to be one.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, communication is the number one thing that you should, I mean, and especially, again, you know, in any relationship, but especially when you're dealing with something that's very chronic that is going to cause, you know, additional things that you have to be able to talk about it. And you know what I would say? Don't talk about it in bed. Don't talk about it 2 minutes before you're trying to do it. Talk about it like over breakfast, on a car ride, somewhere neutral.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably be like a, you know, bring it up in a more lighthearted way rather than in.
Yeah,
well,
I would agree.
How you communicate
way,
nicer
I just wouldn't
rather
start.
Than aggressive.
Mm-hmm. I just wouldn't bring it up like even 2 hours before bed. Because what if the conversation continues on longer and longer and you're staying up and you're not able to stay awake?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. If we're tired or if I've already taken my medication, mm-hmm. for, you know, don't talk to me. I'm not going to have a coherent conversation with you.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. you know, don't talk to me when you know I'm not going to have a coherent conversation with you. So you don't rouse someone in the middle of the night to talk to them about their taxes. Don't talk to me about my love life at 9 p.m. when I'm trying to go to sleep. You know, like little things like that.
Well, if you want to have a serious conversation about your love life, yeah. I mean, if you're
talking about yeah, like if my spouse, sense, yeah, like, if, sure. like you and I, like as friends, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed. Agreed.
Okay, shoot me another question.
Okay. I would say, well, we were talking about orgasms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you know that midlife lent itself to the loss of ability to orgasm? And apparently MS and other chronic conditions can cause the loss of arousal or ability to orgasm in both women and men. And it's really important to maintain open communication with your partner and your doctors, because you never know when someone will be able to suggest to you that you might put the spark back into your life. So I wanted to hear, that's something I wanted to hear about. I wanted to hear about your hot tub experience. You were going to tell me about your hot tub experience.
Okay. So since I have MS and I've had bowel and bladder control problems, I've always been very scared about going into the jacuzzi because, you know, it's a tub of hot water, and that's, I'm going to, like, lose myself and not be in control of all my senses and my functions. So I wanted to stay away from a jacuzzi. Well, on my honeymoon in 21, I went to the Bahamas with my husband, and there was a jacuzzi. For some reason, I just said, okay, yeah, I'll go in it. And nothing bad happened. I was shocked. And so now if there's a jacuzzi, I try it out, and I'm doing okay with it. I don't stand for a long time, but I do go in there and makes my husband very happy.
That's
I love
wonderful.
Hot tubs. I know you're supposed to cap it at about 5 to 10 minutes total when you have MS so you don't go into heat intolerances. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
I do that. I particularly like hot showers, and I shouldn't, but I do like hot showers. But I don't like I. That's it's like the sensory issue thing. Sometimes people might experience a sensory, you know, like a delay, or and then like you might get nervous. It's happened to me before for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But like jacuzzis and water, like I love it. I love it. Love it. Love it. Like. Everything, cold water, warm water, hot water, water, fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's because I'm, you know, like such a coastal place.
No, I agree with you. It was very funny.
Yeah,
I had gone with a whole bunch of, should I stop or continue?
No, keep going. Sorry, I was just going to say I love hot tubs too.
It's funny because I went with a bunch of my fellow actresses to a Korean spa, and they had all these different types of baths. And so all the women were sitting in, all of my friends were sitting in a jacuzzi, hot water. I'm like, oh, I can't go in there, gosh. So I saw there's a cold one, and I just jumped right in. I had a huge orgasm right there. And I'm just trying to, like, grab onto the side of the jacuzzi so that I don't go underneath. But I like my whole body was in spasms. And that was the first time that I had had an orgasm in, God, 10 years, 10 or 12 years. So
wow.
It was
hilarious. I went like a few months. I just went a few months because psychologically I was going through a difficult period in my life last year, but, you know, about a year ago. And I was going through, you know, a difficult period mentally, and I thought, you know, for some other things. And I thought, oh my God, is this it? Because I had heard that, you know, women could eventually get to a point where they can stop orgasming. And I was like, oh my God, what if it's happened to me? But it didn't. It came back. And when it came back, it came roaring in like the 20s. And that was it. It was over. And yeah, like at first I was like, oh no, this is, I'm too young. and then it wasn't. It was like very temporary. It was just an emotional thing that I needed to solve. And once my emotional weight got right, my physical body sort of followed along with it.
Well, as we get older, our orgasms change. I mean, mine aren't as powerful as they used to be, and the women that I've talked to have said that it's just a different type of orgasm. And my husband says the same thing. So we just go and look for different other fun things to do.
That's why I've said on the show, like, that if you're concerned about it, you should consult a healthcare professional, because if you've noticed changes in your body, you might want to consult a doctor, because you don't know. You don't know if it's your MS, if there's something going on with your sexual functioning. You know, you might be embarrassed about it, but you should talk to a doctor about it. I mean, it might actually be something, and you might just want to talk to someone about it.
Unblock your chakras, whatever you have going on mentally, emotionally, just unblock it and try to see if that doesn't help your body help to, you know, have an immediate orgasm when you jump into a cold tub, right? Just this, an emotional and physical experience that can just come to you from, you know, like that, just rise up out of you. It's yours. It's yours for the taking. But if it does sort of get delayed or dulled with age, I haven't experienced that yet. And when I do, I'll report back. But as of yet, haven't gotten to that. And when I did sort of begin to experience that a little bit, literally, I went to 2 talk therapy sessions, and I was solved. And then I sex, and that was it. It was awesome. So sometimes when you say you need to go to a doctor, go to a doctor. Go to a doctor. Figure out what doctor you need and go to it. Yes. Next question.
Sorry. I'm trying to keep up with you guys. Susan, are you here with us? Uh-oh.
She may have dropped off again.
Well, give me 1 second. I have things I have to do at my studio, apparently. I've got radio magic to work. Sometimes it's magical around here at the studios. We talk about dealing with strain in our relationship. Sometimes being a radio host is a lot like having a relationship.
Well, you know what? Since we have a minute, I guess I can go back and address. I guess you had mentioned something earlier, and you know, it kind of just has stayed. I've stayed thinking about it, where it's like, do our emotions affect our intimacy? And I said, I don't know necessarily whether or not it affects men, and I didn't want to speak on it. But you know what?
Yes, it does.
And I know that like certain types of problems can really get in their heads. So if like a man maybe, you know, emotionally or financially or whatever isn't where they thought they'd be, they're going to be in their head. And if they're in their head for that, they may not be able to be fully, able to, you know, so they might need things like, you know, performance.
Susan,
you know.
Excuse me really quickly, Erica. I'm really sorry. Can I ask you what the first 3 numbers of your phone number is for a second?
Sure, it's 805.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Erica, did we still have you on?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. Fantastic. Okay, thank you, ladies. Okay, we can continue. Sorry.
It's okay, Lisa. Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Lisa?
No.
Okay,
yeah,
I'm trying to tell you that I'm falling asleep.
Okay.
I have got no energy, so I'm going to have to stop the interview now. I'm so sorry,
okay.
But I just
I'm
too tired.
We will continue another time, and please, as you know,
it was great meeting
always
you, Erica.
Say that at
likewise,
any time,
Susan, energy windows.
Yeah, have a
totally
wonderful evening. Yeah.
Good night.
Thank you so much, and good night. Thank you, Susan. Okay. So, let us continue.
And it really can be that fast for people that maybe don't know. It really can be that fast where you can physically feel totally fine, and then in 10 minutes, that's it. Energy window shut. So if you intended having intimacy that night, no, you're not. If you had planned something earlier in the day, it's not happening. And you just have to sort of adjust and go with the flow. And this is the cards you were dealt every day you roll the dice, whether you have MS or not, whether you're having sex or not, every day you roll the dice. And so you've got to try to make that dice roll count.
Yeah. Oh, I used to be in the middle of a sentence. I used to be in the middle of a sentence and fall asleep. So
I
completely
understand. Yeah, exactly. Completely understand.
Yeah. And I have no
prescription naps. I have my prescription naps. Where it really does help, as I call them. It's like, nope, they're prescribed. I will have to stop my work day, stop my day. I need to address this important issue right here, which is taking a 45 minute to 2 hour nap or in order to be functional, period.
Yeah, I need a nap. Thank you.
Yes, exactly. I need a nap. Thank you. Yeah. Without things like naps, it's impossible to have, you know, to restore a relationship, you know, or sexual function for people because you're tired all the time. So you have to find ways to have sexy naps or something, you know?
Yeah. Sexy naps. A sexy nap sounds like, heck, that sounds amazing.
I just invented something there. A sexy nap.
Yeah.
I may have just invented
sexy
something.
Nap.
Hashtag
sexy
nap. Oh, God.
I like that. I think you have invented something. Oh, I like that.
Sorry.
No.
That's an Erica original.
That is an Erica original. I love that. did you know that women only experience orgasm 50% of the time when they have sex?
No.
Yes.
That's terrible.
Yes.
I wouldn't show up. I would not show up.
When I was doing research for the show, and I was like, what? Really? Okay, so, I was like, wait, that's not me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I wouldn't show up.
I was like, okay, so I guess, I didn't want to say anything about this, but, only 50% of the time, and they having sex, and okay, so the dominant factor of their orgasms depend on their relationships with their partner. So men, in contrast, who are sexually active, men have orgasms 90% of the time. Women have it 50% of the time, but men say that they depend on the quality of their women's orgasms, and that is why they have sex, and women say that the quality of their men's orgasms is why they have sex. So, and why they have their orgasm, and men say that's why they have their orgasm. is their, on their women's orgasm. So it all is on their dependency. So it's all, the intimacy is all dependent on their partner. If
I like
you,
the she comes first approach. I like
that whole
she comes first. Like if you put the sort of the softer, you know, person in the relationship first, yours will come, you know? But maybe that probably doesn't hold true 100% of the time, but I feel like 50% of women, or 50% of the time not orgasming during a sexual encounter, yeesh, that's pretty abysmal. Got to do better, ladies.
Yeah.
We got to do better. As
I
a
know.
Collective, we should get together.
I know,
we should be collective bargaining on this. This is terrible.
But it's really sad that, like, that women feel like they have to lie.
We need better representation.
That's sad.
Like, yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. But, like, where does it come from? That, where does the lying part come from? Why do women feel like they have to lie about it?
Well, I mean,
I don't get that.
Not as a psychologist or anything, but, I mean, I think it's pretty clear we don't want to make them feel bad. It's like, I'd rather you not feel bad, so I'll tell a lie. And I think that for a lot of things, that's a white lie, and it's not a big deal. But in a long-term relationship, enough white lies like that, and 50% of the times you're not having an orgasm, that's terrible. Don't lie about that.
Yeah.
That's one thing that you should be brutally honest with. Be like, hey, baby, this, you know, and in a nice way, you know, but brutally honest. Hey, but by the way, you know, so that way it's very clear. Again, that's that communication.
Yeah, it's that's very true, and I think it's very I don't know, that upsets me, and I find it upsetting, and that is something that I would say, like, if there was one thing that I could tell people about what I'd figured out because of this interview, that would be the thing that I would want to tell people that I came away with. Now, I was going to ask you, what would be something that you would want to tell people about sex and MS in general that you would want to talk about with people? Like, if you were like, hey, I want to impart this to you, this information.
Okay, so in preparing, I guess, a little bit thinking about this before, conversation before, I did have one thought, and I was already ready for this question, if you will, which is, look, if your society throws you a lifeline, take it. So, and you can use that for sex or for anything. And so if your society has thrown you a lifeline, take it. Society has created lubricants. Society has created all kinds of gadgets, contraptions, additions, lingerie, you know, viewables, whatever. If that's what your relationship needs, do it. And then talk about it. That's basically it. If your, you know, culture has said, you know, has given you something, use it. So it's like, okay, if because you're getting older and you are experiencing, you know, a dryness, use lubricant. Don't be embarrassed. Just get some. They sell it at the gas station or better places, but it's literally everywhere. Don't be afraid, you know, that would be it. Don't be afraid.
Yeah. Sex is normal and natural, and you should be able to talk about it.
And everybody wants it. And to act like you don't want it is okay if you don't, because maybe you no longer want it. But if you want to want it and you want it, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. And, you know, we, hopefully, if you are listening to this, I hope you are an adult. We are adults, and we should be able to talk about it, especially since this is an educational program, and you, if you are listening to this, you should be educating yourself. And I hope you are here to educate yourself and learn more about something that is important. And I thank you for coming here and listening to us and educating yourself, because these are important things to talk about. And yes, sex is something that is fun, but it is also something that is intimate and should be done with your partner. And,
you know what, Lisa, I would want to add one quick thing. Probably be, if you have a disability, be wary of disease. You know, let's just throw that out there. Let's just be real wary, and don't be thinking, you know, don't sell yourself short because you have a disability. Don't sell yourself short because, you know, don't think you have to. Because no, you don't have to anything.
Yeah, no.
And so
exactly.
That's a big one. And so protect yourself, protect your energy, protect your health, the physical, emotional, sexual health, all of it. And so
don't put,
you know,
a disease on top of a disease. Yeah.
Yes, don't put a disease on top of a disease because you're really chasing something emotional. Let's not do that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That's all. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
But thank you for having me on today. Thank you. Yes.
Oh, of course. Thank you for being here. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It is my pleasure to have you as a guest. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. And thank you, Susan, for being here. Thank you, guys. You are forever in my debt. You guys are my friends. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I am very, very thankful. Unfortunately, the clock is ticking down and we have to say goodbye. However, you guys out there in the audience, out there on the radio, you will always be able to find Rest with MS in the Brain Injury Radio archives and on the second and fourth Sunday of the month at 5:30 PST and 8:30 EST. I'd like to thank all my guests and you guys out there for joining me again and with all of your wonderful wisdom and verve. And thanks for being the best audience a girl could have. Tune in next time for more Mess with MS. And good night. Good night, Erica.
Thank you so much.
You're very, bye-bye. Very welcome. Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.